strap on the boots and scrape up the knuckles.
Oh, what a hit!
He got jacked.
This is the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert.
Murray's gonna score! Touchdown! Slammed to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield.
The Rage is brought to you by Santan Ford and Gilbert. Right on the price. Right on the corner of the Santan 202 Freeway in Val Vista. SeatGeek, your ticket to great seats. And by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcast.
The Red Sea is rising up!
Temperature rising, vision blurring, rage taking over.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
I'm ready. I'm 100% ready. I'm telling you I'm ready.
And Ron Wolfley.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Unleash the fury!
And then there was one. One game left this NFL season. It's only the game El Grande, the biggest on the planet, Super Bowl 58. Can Kansas City become the NFL's first repeat champ since New England 2003-2004? Can the Niners win a record-tying sixth Super Bowl in their eighth appearance? Remember, the Niners' last Super Bowl win was 1994. It is the Big Red Rage presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. We are Santan Ford, and we are the original Thursday Night Football. Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley. Wolf, did you know that the only teams to win three Super Bowls in a five-year span, well, there were three, and it's the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 70s, the Dallas Cowboys in the 90s, New England in 2000 and 2010s, and now maybe, just maybe, Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes.
Boy, Paulie, it really is incredible what Patrick Mahomes is doing right now. When you think that he's been to the championship game six consecutive years, and the only thing keeping him from going to the Super Bowl are two overtime losses in those conference championship games. That is stunning, Paul. Yeah.
So, every other team that's not in the Super Bowl, you're building your team. If you're the Cardinals, for example, you're in the NFC West. You're obviously looking to knock off the division champion 49ers. Last time you played them, you ran for more than 200 yards. Nick Bosa and a lot of those defenders, Fred Warner, were like, man, what just happened? That's the first time a Niners defense had given up 200 yards rushing in like 50 games. So, the Cardinals got on the right track, especially the last part of the season. And now they're looking for the next wave of players. Would you say Monty Ossenfort had a pretty auspicious start to his draft career as Cardinals GM based on last season's rookie class, Ron Wolfley?
Paulie, there is no doubt about it, man. There is real hope, real optimism because of that first draft.
And look, it wasn't just the draft class. I mean, it was a lot of the rookies, undrafted rookies as well, right? The Amari DiMercato, Starling Thomas, Elijah Higgins. I mean, they found guys, and they found guys that fit their mold, fit the mindset they're looking for. And yep, it's been a process to assemble the team. And now you send your team of assistant coaches out to some of these all-star games. You have the Senior Bowl going on in Mobile, Alabama. And as we speak at the Cowboys facility in Frisco, Texas, they are playing the Shrine Bowl, the East-West Shrine Bowl. And the offensive coordinator is Cardinals receivers coach and passing game coordinator Drew Terrell. And he was talking about being the OC at the Shrine before he left.
Anytime you're looking to grow and elevate, in whatever profession you're in, you've got to do things that you wouldn't normally do and kind of step out of that comfort zone. So it's been awesome. Standing in front of the entire offensive unit, giving an install or watching practice, talking to the old linemen about combinations in the running game in front of the entire group. You know, I'm a guy that's coached on the perimeter pretty much my entire career. I coached on defense for a year, but, you know, I haven't been in that situation where I had to talk run game with offensive linemen, guys that do it on a day-to-day basis, and speak about it with confidence and conviction and make it sound like I know what I'm talking about. So, you know, that's been good. Sitting in the quarterback rooms has been outstanding. Script and practice. And I didn't realize how much time and detail that takes.
There you go. Drew Terrell just talking about the OC at the Shrine Bowl. So, Wolf, you went through the whole draft process before your 10-year career. How beneficial do you think it is to coaches, you know, to go beyond just grinding film and actually interact with some of these draftees?
Paulie, it's absolutely huge. It really is. It prepares them for whatever is the next step in their own personal career right now. You know, a lot of these guys, of course, they have aspirations of being a head coach one day. Well, the next step for Drew Terrell is going to be the offensive coordinator. He's going to be a guy that is going to be looking to do that at some point in time, and then maybe a head coach after that. But it's very, very interesting to see these guys, Paulie, and how they develop right now. And to me, standing up in front of the team, boy, that is a big deal. I think of team meetings, and rarely would anybody ever address the team that wasn't a coordinator or a head coach.
Interesting. Well, Drew Terrell has company. Spencer Whipple coaching receivers at the Shrine Game. And then at the Senior Bowl, you have Israel Wolfork, quarterbacks coach Autry Denson, running backs coach Chris Cook, offensive line coach Connor Senger, wide receivers coach, all on the Cardinals staff. And then conversely, when they're interacting with those players, well, these college kids who are trying to forge an NFL career, how much more do you think they're learning than just watching film, just in interacting with these players on a daily basis?
Oh, yeah, they're learning an awful lot about the players, Paulie. This is why it's a huge advantage if you can actually get coaches that are working with these guys playing in these all-star games that are out there right now. It's a huge advantage. They get to know the player in the They get to know him personally. That's a huge advantage, and you can pass that kind of information along to scouts, of course. And, you know, the Senior Bowl, as you know, Paulie, is a big deal. It's been around for a long, long time. And you get to see these kids up close and personal. That's one of the things that evaluators love the most. They put these kids in very, very competitive situations and then watch how they respond. And, Paul, it's in practice. And evaluators will tell you, you know, and I know this applies to the East-West Shrine Bowl as well, but evaluators will tell you it's so critical to watch a kid practice. The game is almost secondary. In fact, there are evaluators who will tell you the 3 days of practice, it's more important than the game itself because they get to observe and watch some of these young guys go about their business and watch their work ethic.
All right, so on this edition of the Big Red Rage presented by Santan, Ford, and Gilbert, momentarily we're going to talk to Frank Sanders, former Cardinals receiver, former round two pick, former Auburn All-American, and we're going to ask him about one guy in particular, Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yep.
And Larry Fitzgerald was asked about the Ohio State All-American recently by Cam Cox of 12 Sports, and here's what Fitz had to say.
He's a stud, and if he's there, I hope we get him. Kyler would love to throw it to him. I'm a big fan of his father's, and, you know, from everything I've heard, you know, he's just a really good, hard-working young man. So, like, you can never have enough high-character, outstanding, talented football players, you know, because those are guys are the pillars of your foundation.
Jay Feely called him the next you, like he compared him to you. Now you're that guy where people are like, hey, they can be the next, you know, in a way.
He's a heck of a lot more talented than I was at that age. You know, he can take short passes and go long. He can go over the top. He's a willing participant, like in terms of blocking in the run game. Like,
he used to do that too.
But I wasn't a willing participant until like 2013, like later in my career.
Along,
yeah. You know, I did it begrudgingly. But now he does it already, you know, in college, and he does it really well. So if he's there, I definitely would love to see him.
Under Bruce Arians, used to call him the best blocking receiver in the game, and Larry actually didn't like that. He actually didn't like
that's
it.
That's right, Paul.
Remember that?
Yes,
that's
I do funny. Remember that. But you know what, Paulie? It's interesting because that is where he really improved, Larry Fitzgerald. And you know why? Because B.A. used to demand that his wide receivers block.
Yeah.
And Larry, he did it. Yeah. To
look,
his credit.
And look, if you're telling me that Marvin Harrison Jr. is the next Larry Fitzgerald and is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, absolutely.
Right.
Generational talent. You take him at number four. But there's also the possibility that you might have a trade offer. And so, I mean, Wolf, how do you weigh that? Because I'm guessing that Monty Osifor still wants to build from the inside out.
You know what I'd say, Paulie, right now? Because I do believe Marvin Harrison Jr., and I know you know this, but I love this kid. I really do. I'm going to put my hands over my ears and go, la, 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 la. Whoever calls, I'm not taking it. I'm going to draft him if he's there at number four.
Hey, join the Cardinals season ticket priority list today. 2024 home opponents include the Bears, the Chargers, the Patriots, the Jets, the Lions, the Commanders, and, of course, the NFC West. By the way, the Seahawks have a brand new head coach, Mike McDonald. Donald, the former Ravens defensive coordinator, who literally is half the age of Pete Carroll. He's 36 and just got a six-year deal. For all your info on the Cardinals season ticket priority list, go to azcardinals.com/priority list. Frank Sanders is next on the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford in Gilbert.
Plummer looks, Plummer throws the ball, and it is caught on an acrobatic catch by Sanders at the 40-yard line in front of Darryl Green.
Great effort by Frank Sanders.
Plummer looks, Plummer throws to the far side. Sanders makes the catch!
Frank Sanders, I'll tell you what, he's everything. He's made all the big plays.
Plummer back to throw again. He's going to wind up. He's going to go deep, far side of the field. Sanders makes the catch and scores!
Plummer, a five-step drop, and he lobs one to the left.
Rolling right, going to fire to the right, caught by Sanders, touchdown Cardinals! It's a four-yard touchdown, and the Cardinals in command!
How about that, a young Dave Pash there on the call? The late, great Tom Dillon, oh man, playmaker, difference maker, baller, Frank Sanders, Ron Wolfley, two-time 1,000-yard receiver after he was a round-two pick of the Cardinals, 1995, a two-sport star in the SEC. In fact, one of those rare players who has something in common with Kyler in that Frank Sanders was also drafted in the NFL and MLB drafts. How about that?
Wow. I did not know that, Paulie.
No, yes. And now, instead of hitting that white ball, he hits a little white golf ball instead of a baseball. And he joins us now. In fact, we're tearing him away from the Golf Channel probably as we speak. Frank Sanders, welcome to the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. How we doing, Frank?
Doing very good, guys. Thanks for that. That intro was pretty special. Look, it's definitely takes you back to the days when it was me and the snake trying to get out there to make some plays so we can get some W's over at the old ASU stadium.
Frankie, I got to ask you this right off the top here, but what positions did you excel at in the game of baseball?
Outfield, actually.
Outfield?
Infield was so here's a quick little story of mine, man. I didn't play Little League baseball at all growing up. My mom wouldn't let me play it. She was savvy on the guys that was playing, and she was like, "Nah, Frank, those characters, those band of characters, you don't want to hang out with." So she wouldn't let me play Little League baseball. When I got in high school, I was able to play baseball. So I didn't know much about the game, but I knew the ball would hurt when it hit you, and I knew that the closer you were to the ball, the closer to the ball. Well, the guy that's batting, it could hurt even more. So I went to the outfield, and I excelled center field and right field without a problem.
Wow. I mean, to pick up baseball that late, right? I mean, it's just a tribute to your hand-eye coordination, among other things. No doubt about that. Frank Sanders, our guest here on the Big Red Rage. All right, so tell us, speaking of Kyler, what do you make of Kyler's last three games where he really turned it on? The Cardinals' offense really turned a corner. How much can we put into those final three games? Because he showed up midseason coming off the knee injury, obviously, and it was a process. But by the last three games, Frank, it looked different. He played different. I'm just curious, how much stock, in your opinion, can we put into that going into next season?
You know, this is a two-part answer, and I'm, you know, just speaking individually, specifically about Kyler. I mean, you can watch a guy that was anxious to get his opportunity to come back after a terrible knee injury the following season. But what you do see is once he got back in the fold, he quickly began to kind of immerse himself into a new offense with the new offensive coordinator calling plays the way he calls them, you know, adding different pieces, which is, you know, not just sitting in the shotgun and throwing the ball deep to a four or five wide receiver situation. You know, you look at a guy who, you know, really just kind of grew himself, you know, mentally and emotionally in the game. Again, the injury is not the easiest thing to come back from. There's so many expectations, and then there's so many doubts that you're fighting in your mind. Can I still do this? Can I still be that guy? But more importantly, can I go out and play 100% free as the kid in me would normally want to play and the guy that has been playing prior to that injury? But I saw Kyle, and I thought he did an excellent job. I thought the team rallied around him really well, you know, in his leadership position. But secondly, in that answer, you know, Paul, I'm really going to say you just got to watch the way, you know, Drew handled the offense, and he didn't change. You know, from the preseason to the regular season when we first had, Joshua Dobbs become the quarterback, and we went through that little process for like 8 weeks. He didn't change his offense. He found a way to get the ball to the running back. The tight end became a bigger picture. you know, in the game. And I think that when you saw Kyler came in, nothing changed. And I thought that that was a good evolution, you know, as a whole, you know, offensively, when you can see the offensive coordinator stay true to the game, the quarterback adjust to it, and they both become effective, you know, in trying to find what formula causes us to compete, but all, not only just compete, but also win.
That is really well said right there, Frankie, no doubt. Where do you think Kyler can improve the most? Where does he need to continue to grow?
You know, when I watch him, man, I think that, you know, there's just the knowledge of the game. And I think more importantly is it's learning how teams are attacking you. You know, that's one of the biggest things about a quarterback in the NFL. It's not what you did in college that just made you great, but it's how your opponent is actually playing chess against you. You know, we see a lot of quarterbacks who struggle with two men or two blitzers coming from the right-hand side, which they want to funnel him out to the left. And he's like 0 for 13 for throwing on the move to the left side. So I think that's just one of the things that you learn as a veteran when you get into the NFL is it's what the team is trying to do to you. And I think that that sometimes becomes, you know, your athleticism allows you to kind of overcome a lot of stuff. But when you really get down to the thick of it, it's really learning what teams are trying to do to you. And therefore, it slows the game down so much more. It slows it down for a young quarterback when you know that these guys are going to blitz right, they're going to blitz outside, or in Kyler's situation, because he's so fast and so explosive on the outside, teams just they don't rush to sack him. They rush to keep him in the pocket. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things. If he learns that and learns how to overcome that situation, it'd be much better. Everything else is just effortless. He's accurate with the throw. He makes, you know, he has a quick release with the arm. We know he can throw the ball down the field. You know, all those things are there. But the ability to know how someone is trying to attack you becomes that much, much better. And I think if he grows in that area, the maturity process would be excellent.
It's Frank Sanders, former Cardinals receiver, had that standout 1998 season, big part of that team that went to Dallas, won that playoff game. Speaking of standout seasons, Trey McBride, in his second year, led the Cardinals in receptions and receiving yards as a tight end. What does that do for an offense, and what do you think the upside is with the young tight end?
Look, let me first say amen, hallelujah, for just finding a way to get the tight end involved in the football game, yeah. Right? That's just something that has not been – the Cardinals have not been known for. I mean, even when I was here, it's just not something that we've done. But to watch, you know, you go out in the draft and you get a kid with a bunch of talent, 6'5", 6'4", 235 pounds, runs a 4.5, 4.6, sub that, whatever. But when you watch him become, when you watch him develop in the NFL, I mean, there's just so much more confidence that happens. There's so many more, what do you want to call those? Like little treats that you get. And I'm saying it from the standpoint of just your scouting department, the coaches and what they do, and they realize they got talent. They got a guy that they drafted in a high pick, and he actually came out and started playing. He started making plays. He's not a bust. That's just so much confidence that's taking place. That's just from a, you know, third floor level. But when you get down to the ground and you look at it from a player's perspective, you know, Paulie, honestly, man, the guys and the team, it means that much more. It opens up the offense. It allows your quarterback to feel like he can do anything, and your offensive coordinator to feel like he can have great matchups, you know, with the opponent on the other side.
Speaking of confidence, Frankie, talk a little bit about James Conner and the ability of this offense to run the ball, and how important that was in Kyler Murray's development as well.
Look, JC, you get a tight end that can run the ball. What has been the form in the NFL for the last, you know, what, 20 years? When it comes to a team winning, a stud receiver, a hell of a tight end that's effective, you know, in the red zone or across the, you know, that neutralizes the safety and the Sam coming down in the box, and then also a running back that can, you know, that can get up in those guts and move the pile or get you that first down when you need it. JC emotionally is everything you want in a running back. You want a guy that can be physical. You want a guy that'll get on the offensive lineman or anybody on the team if they're not doing their job, a true leader. And I think, like, when you look at what he does for Kyler, he opens up and makes the teams play honest. Defensively, most people don't get a chance to see that. They don't get a chance to see that what the box really looks like. They look at, you know, the TV doesn't do it justice. They literally pan out, and then when the quarterback says hike, they focus. They zoom in on the quarterback. they didn't want to sit throw the ball, they follow the ball. But when it comes to when you see what a running back's able to do, you know, there's a process that's taking place on your quarterback having to check out of, you know, watching 5 men in the box to watching 7 men in the box to watching, you know, they come down into a nickel and a dime. All those things become a factor. But James Conner and the way he runs the ball and the way this offensive line got so much better this year, it just it's another notch in our belt that's going to make defenses next year pay that much more attention to.
Yes, we like to say he's more than a player. He's a mindset. He's a mentality. That's how tough he is. All right, so former receiver Frank Sanders, what do you say about taking a current receiver at number 4 overall, like, oh, I don't know, Marvin Harrison Jr.? Do you make that move, or do you think you'd be more apt to maybe trade down and get another receiver later and try and build the line of scrimmage?
You know what, I'll say this here. There are 3 or 4 receivers right now on the top of the list that just makes your heart melt, especially from a receiver standpoint or a quarterback. They're all 6'3", 6'4", tall, lanky, rangy guys with arms. They can make all kind of plays from the one step hits to, you know, throwing the ball down the field, not afraid to go across the middle. And Marvin Harrison would be something that you just would love to have, especially because you know you need to have receivers in the NFL. The conversation I would have, if you have to draft him, then what are you giving up or what would you be doing? I think that if you had a chance to get him, Paulie, I think the conversation would be you just won in the draft because you know what you're getting, a polished receiver that runs great routes. I mean, this could be, another dreaded hair situation like Larry Fitzgerald.
Yep.
A guy that runs all the routes. He's got speed. You know, he's quality. He's quality on every area from the outside to the inside. He's knowledgeable as a receiver. So you're winning in that area. But I will add this in. We can look at the NFL and there's 32 teams, but there's probably only about maybe 12 to 15 receivers that you absolutely know. Everyone's running a 4 wide receiver situation, but there's only like 12 to 15 receivers that you absolutely know. Unless you're a fan of that team, those guys get the star conversations. But Paulie, in reality, if your scouting department is doing what it needs to do, there are a lot of receivers out there, man, that can make plays that if you can steal them in the draft between the 3rd, 4th, and 5th round, that's going to be absolutely helpful to Kyler.
Frankie, what do you think Marvin Harrison Jr.'s best attribute is?
Besides his height, his size, his speed, his hands,
the 6'4" is pretty good.
Besides those things, honestly, you know what? He just has a pedigree.
Yeah,
you know, we talk about that. He come, you know, this is the son of one of the greatest receivers ever played a game.
Yeah,
that played with one of the greatest quarterbacks, and that Peyton Manning. You know, and they just dominated for so many years. And Marvin Harrison, a former, you know, Syracuse kid. That got into the NFL, you know, not that big of a body, but absolutely effective in route running, the ability to get open. But not only that, he just don't drop the ball. Like, that's more important in the NFL than anything. You can run great routes. You can be the fastest guy on the team. But if you drop balls, then you're not helping your team not one bit. And I think that's one of the things that we can see. The pedigree of being able to run routes and get in and out is the biggest thing. Most quarterbacks in the NFL are patting the ball in the backfield, and that's either one or two things. Either they're playing against a very good defensive back, or they're just not being able to get open. And the quarterback is having to wait for him to get open. And I think Marvin Harrison, just mental ability to know how to attack a defense is the most important thing.
Longtime Cardinals receiver Frank Sanders, our guest on the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan, Ford, and Gilbert. Can't let you go without a thought on the Super Bowl. The Chiefs beat Baltimore. The Niners beat the Lions. How do you see the matchup? What one or two things do you think this comes down to?
You know, honestly, I think it comes down to what we saw last week in the football game, which is watching Brock Purdy use his legs. You know, and knowing when to use it. I think there's both teams have talent, and they have very good defense coordinators on how to, you know, double certain guys and take away your strengths, and, you know, but they have, when they try to take away your strengths, Paulie, they have weaknesses. And we saw that last week in the Detroit Lions and Brock Purdy. He just said, you know what, I'm going to run. And if I run, and you guys are dropping all these guys back, you're rushing 4, but you're dropping 7, well, there's zones he found holes in. And I think that, if he's able to do that, then I think that becomes the biggest difference. It's hard to bet against Mahomes, Taylor Swift, you know, the cheese burglar. It's hard to bet. You know, take home the Hamburglars. Wolfie, you got to call him the cheeseburger because he likes cheeseburgers.
Okay.
It's hard to go against those guys. But in reality, man, I'm thinking San Fran. I'm taking Brock Purdy. I think it's his year. I think it's the, you know, San Francisco 49ers year, man. And it should be a really, really good football game.
Are you surprised that the Kansas City Chiefs, they won a lot of games this year in a lot different way, Frankie? As you know, on the defensive side of the ball, man, that defense really was a surprise coming into this season right now. So if you've got to pick a score, for this game, what's that score going to be?
They're going to be playing in Vegas. It's going to be a beautiful atmosphere. They're playing inside. You know, it's February. I want to take a beautiful 28-35.
28-35.
Wow. Yeah.
Well,
all right.
Both those will look pretty dang good on a golf scorecard. So, you know, all the best, Frank, all right, with the swing and the game. We really enjoyed it. How is the golf game these days, by the way?
It's pretty good, man. I don't have no complaints. I think if Kwame Lasseter was still here, he'd be proud of my game. It'd be a good little fight between me, him, Jay Feely, and maybe Wolfie if he can get out of there.
Frankie, I got to ask you this quickly. Biggest thing you miss about the game?
Oh, the biggest thing I miss about the game? The money.
Good.
You're so good.
That's
buddy.
Good. That's right. You can just take all of Jay Feely's money on the golf course.
You're the best, Frankie.
Oh, thanks,
yeah.
Frank.
No, I miss you guys, man. You can't. It's hard to. You can't get that back. I miss you guys.
Oh, hey, likewise.
Thank
appreciate
you,
it,
Frankie.
Great stuff, Frank Sanders.
Love and respect, buddy.
We continue. We'll get into the NFC, right, and talk about this Super Bowl when we come back on the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford in Gilbert.
Got it, and the 49ers are going to the Super Bowl. Bet on red. Viva Las Vegas!
Come on.
Christian McCaffrey's going to his first Super Bowl. Brock Purdy's going to his first Super Bowl. The 49ers have won this crazy championship game, and they are going to the Super Bowl.
Our guys, your counterparts, Dave Pasch, Ron Wolfley, Greg Papa, and Tim Ryan on the call on Niners Radio. They are going to Super Bowl 58. They're talking about a Niners team that scored 17 points in an 8-minute span in the third quarter, then pulled away in the fourth. In fact, they scored 27 straight points after trailing 24-7 at halftime. And you're thinking, man, that must have been a heck of a halftime speech by Kyle Shanahan. He said after the game that he basically just told everyone, "We're not going out like this," quote, end quote. And then Brock Purdy said, no one was rah-wah. No one was freaking out. You look, it's football, a lot of experienced guys. And man, did they turn it around. They won 34-31. And yes, they're going to Super Bowl 58, 49ers against Kansas City. It is a Big Red Rage presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. Special thanks to Frank Sanders once again. So, Wolf, where do you start with this NFC Championship? I know on Twitter, three words were trending: take the points. As Dan Campbell, people were very critical of him going for it on fourth down instead of opting for the field goal.
Yeah, Paulie, you know, for me, the biggest surprise about this game was the fact the Lions dominated the line of scrimmage from the start of the game. I was really, really surprised. Now, listen, I know the Lions are a very physical team, but, man, we saw the 49ers up close and personal twice, of course, and we know how physical they are on both sides of the ball as well. But the Lions were the more physical team, man. They came out and they bludgeoned the 49ers.
They ran for a 148 in the first half. And I'm sitting there watching, I'm going, you know what? That's the formula. That's the formula for the Cardinals. Were you saying the same thing to yourself? That's why Monty Osborne and Jonathan Gannon are stressing line of scrimmage, building from the inside out. I mean, the Cardinals already had the fourth-ranked rushing game in the NFL. But to me, Detroit put it out there, and I've said it more than once, the Honolulu blueprint for the Cardinals, and I think that's how you dethrone the NFC champion Niners.
Yeah, but you know, it also speaks to the culture of the Lions, Paulie, because once again, the Lions were much more intense from top to bottom, man, on both sides of the ball. You could just see the intensity and the desperation level. And, you know, I'm not talking about yards. I'm not talking about points, Paulie. I'm not talking about any of that, man. I'm talking about the plays that were being called on both sides of the line of scrimmage, and the difference in intensity, it was noticeable to me. And I have to wonder if the 49ers still believed, especially playing at home, oh man, do you know who we are? We're the 49ers, you're the Lions. Do you have any idea who we are? I just think there was a bit of complacency, at least from what I saw in that first half.
Yeah, it certainly looked like it. All right, Brock Purdy, he led him back. Now, we know what he did the week before, right, against Green Bay, that game-winning drive, and it was the first time. Remember, the Niners had been 0-31 when trailing by five entering the fourth quarter under Kyle Shanahan. Then he had an even bigger comeback against Detroit. What do you think we learned about Brock Purdy in that NFC Championship game?
Yeah, you know, the last 2 weeks, the divisional round, of course, and the NFC Championship game, guess what? Brock Purdy brought his team back, Paul. He was the quarterback, and he was at the center of both of those comebacks. You know, to me, that is the best thing that could happen to the 49ers, is that their young quarterback, who has accomplished so much in a year and a half, his second year in the league, and yet a year and a half, this guy has accomplished so much in terms of going out and growing as a quarterback. But to be able to do it, to be able to go out and execute and orchestrate an offense when you need it the most and when it's the most pressure, man, that speaks so much of Brock Purdy right now in his growth and development.
Yeah, and really key were those two 21-yard scrambles. And to me, that was Mahomes-esque. You know, Patrick Mahomes kills you with the legs just in those critical moments when he manages to keep a defense honest. You know, he's not a Lamar Jackson, but he runs enough to convert those really tough third downs, and Brock Purdy did that twice. And I know for everyone who calls him a game manager, it's interesting because it seems like a lot of his stars come to his defense. After the game, Christian McCaffrey said, quote, all he's done since he's been here is play at an elite level. Everything starts with him. We're lucky he's our quarterback. He takes a lot of heat for absolutely no reason. That's Christian McCaffrey on Brock Purdy.
Yeah, Pauly, no doubt about it. I also, too, want to go back to the game management part of it right here, where you were talking about take the points with Dan Campbell, of course. I talk about the intensity level of the Detroit Lions and how they were so physical, so much more to start this game, because it's a great example of what happened when Dan Campbell decided to go for it on fourth down as opposed to making it a three-possession game, Pauly. Had the opportunity in the third quarter to make it a three-possession game, to kick the field goal. He did not do it, and it's a slap in the face to anybody that believes in momentum in the football game and how important momentum in a football game truly is. It is denying what is the truth. You can feel it down on the field when momentum starts swinging, and that kind of momentum gave the 49ers the impetus to get back in the game when the Lions were dominating that game, Paul.
Yeah. Well, and then the second time in the fourth quarter with about 10 minutes left, and the Lions trailed by three, fourth and three from the Niners 30, and you had a chance to tie the game.
Yeah.
In the NFC Championship, what's remarkable to me is the Wall Street Journal cited the two probability models that most of the NFL teams use. And on the first one, the Lions had an 85% chance of winning by going for it, an 82% chance of winning if they kicked the field goal. So only a 3% spread. And the second time around, it was 28% versus 26%. Falling. Because at that point, they were trailing, only a 2% spread. So to me, is the return on investment, the risk reward, worth going for it when the difference in win probability is only a couple percent?
I know, Paulie, and again, I know it's math and those are numbers, and that's really, really cool. But at some point in time, right, a head coach has got to read the room. He's got to read the room and look around and say, man, we have an opportunity to go up and make this a three-possession game against the San Francisco 49ers in their house. We have a chance to do this in the third quarter. Man, that should have been a no-brainer right there. And you saw what happened when the 49ers came up with that stop. All of that momentum, it just went over the 49ers' side, and they capitalized from that point forward. They put the hammer down.
So where do you think the Niners have an advantage on the Chiefs? Is there an area where you think, you know what, the Niners are better here, or the Niners have a competitive advantage in this part of the game that you think a Kyle Shanahan might stress against Kansas City?
Yeah, man, that's really, really rough. I think the Kansas City Chiefs, they got away with a big one when the Baltimore Ravens refused to run the ball.
It's a great point.
Than Dan Campbell.
Yep.
The biggest mystery of conference championship weekend was the Baltimore Ravens refusing to be who they had been all season long and refused to run the ball. And ultimately, that's not Todd Monken. I'm sorry. That's John Harbaugh, whom I love and respect greatly. He's got to say, whoa, what are we doing here? And yet he had to know this was the game plan going in. So, you know, Paulie, I'm sorry, but the Ravens and them not running the ball, that was the biggest mystery to me of all.
That's a great point, because we know the Niners run scheme very well, and Christian McCaffrey will probably be number two in the MVP voting behind Lamar Jackson. And so for everything he did in that game, and he had 90 yards rushing, he had two rushing touchdowns, and Brock Purdy was so efficient, and they just have that really multiple run game, and they keep a defense honest. It'll be real curious to see if they can test KC, you know, especially after Baltimore failed to do exactly that. In fact, we'll talk about the AFC Championship and get some more keys to the Super Bowl when we come back. This is the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. We are Santan Ford.
This game is over, and you can doubt the Chiefs. You can dislike the Chiefs. You can disrespect the Chiefs. You're going to have to deal with the Chiefs being the AFC champions for the fourth time in five seasons. The Chiefs have the Lamar Hunt Trophy, and they're taking it to Vegas for Super Bowl 58.
That's a great call. Mitch Holtis, Chiefs Radio right there.
Wow.
So let's see. You gave us multiple choice. You know what? I'll go with E, all of the above. There is fatigue, but we do respect the Chiefs. And yes, you are going to have to deal with Kansas City if you are the 49ers. And it is hard to believe, at least for me, that the Chiefs are the underdog right now. According to Vegas, that's where the game is going to be, Super Bowl 58. Wrapping up this edition of the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. We are Santan Ford, Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley, Frank Sanders joined us earlier. But, I mean, as if Patrick Mahomes needs any more motivation, he's now 9-3 as an underdog. And I'm guessing he's well aware that he's considered an underdog in this game as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Paulie. The Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes just could do something legendary going forward here. We've seen this with Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, of course. But to see what the Chiefs could possibly achieve, this is truly amazing right now. A dynasty indeed. And that Baltimore Ravens game, the AFC Conference Championship game, there was a bad moon rising to me, Paulie, right from the beginning when the Ravens went 3-and-out and the Chiefs took the ball and went 86 yards down the field and made it 7-0.
Yeah. No doubt. And look, you touched on it in the end of our last conversation. Let's just hit it again. I mean, Lamar had 8 runs, including scrambles. And then beyond that, Baltimore only ran 8 more times for 27 yards. And despite the fact this was never more than a 10-point game, final score 17-10. And in fact, Baltimore was just held to a season-low 81 yards rushing by that Kansas City defense. So are we not giving the Kansas City D maybe enough credit? Because Baltimore on third down went 3 of 11. And then Steve Spagnuolo, I mean, his blitz scheme, he blitzed 20 times, ended up with 4 sacks of Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, man. The Kansas City Chiefs, they just outplayed the Baltimore Ravens. But the game plan of the Baltimore Ravens, I was screaming at the television. I'm sure I wasn't alone. I'm sure there were a lot of Baltimore Raven fans screaming at the television as well. I just could not believe that they were not trying to run the ball and established a guy like Gus Edwards, who's 6'1", 240 pounds. They run the ball. They attack the line of scrimmage in a north-south vertical kind of way. I was stunned that they only ran the ball 16 times in this game, and 8 of those was Lamar Jackson running the ball. I've never seen anything like it where a team who bases their entire culture and identity on doing something refused to actually do it when it mattered the most in a championship game. Unbelievable.
It's almost like teams go in against Patrick Mahomes and company and think they have to do something super extra. And then they end up just defying their own identity. You know, Baltimore, just the moment looked too big for them. They had eight flags, five personal fouls. You know, you had a Kansas City receiving corps that led the NFL in drops in the regular season, had zero. They played very clean. I mean, you're talking about a Chiefs team, Wolf, that at one point lost 5 of 8. They lost to the Raiders.
And they
were self-admitted a mess on offense. And so Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and Matt Nagy, they said, you know, we got to simplify things here. They did, and it worked. And now they seem to be playing their best ball of the season.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. But so much of the time, too, in these games, Paulie, these big games, it's about the start and how you start. And, you know, that's why I started with that. The fact that there was a 3-and-out by the Ravens, and then you went down the field 86 yards for a touchdown. Do you know the Chiefs have scored on their opening drive in 8 consecutive postseason games?
Wow.
On their opening drive, Paul.
Wow, that's impressive.
They have scored 8 consecutive postseason games. And by the way, on that note, the last 26 games, the Ravens have allowed an opening drive touchdown twice in the last 26 games. So, Paulie, immediately this game, the tone was set. There was a bad moon rising, and the Chiefs capitalized on that. And the Baltimore Ravens had to be wondering what is going on.
Okay, maybe most confounding to me, though, I got to be honest. Travis Kelce, how does he have 11 catches on 11 targets? How are you not double and triple teaming him at some point?
Yes.
How does he get so stinking wide open when everyone knows he's the best tight end receiving threat in the game?
Yes, Paulie, it's a great question. It's, you want to talk about dogma, you want to talk about culture. The Baltimore Ravens are a zone team. That's what they are. They play more zone than they play a lot more man. They play a lot more zone. That's what they do. They love quarters, 4 deep, 3 underneath. They love cover 3 as well, 3 deep, 4 underneath right there. It's a situation where they love zone. And, oh, my goodness, you're playing that against Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, guys that have a chemistry that is incredible. So I think that they did change their coverage as the game went along. But at first, man, the damage was done with Travis Kelce.
Yeah, even All-Pro Kyle Hamilton, when he was matched up on Kelce, was no match. And I'm curious, really, you know, Steve Wilks, former Cardinals head coach, defensive coordinator for the Niners, I'm curious what he does against Travis Kelce. I know when they went against McBride, Trey McBride, the last game, they started out with Fred Warner, and McBride torched him for a big chunk throw, and then they went with Dre Greenlaw in a combination of a DB over the top and bracket coverage. So I'm curious what the Niners do against Kelce. I'm also curious, you know, just about Isaiah Pacheco and his ability to run the ball in this game, because guess what? When Patrick Mahomes was sacked in the fourth quarter, that was the first sack that KC O-line had given up all postseason.
Yeah.
And we know what that Lions O-line did against the 49ers, especially to start, so I'm curious how that matchup's going to be.
Yeah, I know, Paulie. That is going to be great right there. I mean, you know, the best thing you can possibly do is rush 4 and drop 7. When you face a quarterback like Pat Mahomes, the best thing that you can do as a defense is be able to rush 4 and drop 7. Now, can your 4 get pressure on the opponent? That is the question you've got to ask yourself, because it's no good if you can't get pressure. But I think the 49ers feel like they can get pressure on Pat Mahomes. So I think we're going to see an awful lot of 4-man rushes on Pat Mahomes and dropping 7 into coverage. We'll see how that goes. I know that they're going to be looking at Travis Kelce and how they can take away Travis Kelce in this Super Bowl.
So what sort of game do you expect this to be? And I bring that up because the Kansas City offense, only one time all season, regular or postseason, has scored more than 31 points. They're not what they used to be on offense,
right?
In terms of a high octane, high scoring offense. What do you think about how this game, what sort of game do you expect?
Yeah, you know, I think you're going to get a team on both sides of the ball that's going to try to run the ball. I really do believe that. I know it sounds crazy when you've got a Pat Mahomes, but they need to put Pat Mahomes into a balanced offense. It makes so much sense to do that, once again, because now it will be so much better. You won't put Pat Mahomes in a situation where he's got to deal with that pass rush. And I know the Kansas City Chiefs have a great offensive line, but man, you've got to do that, Paul. You got to put him in a balanced offense. And for the 49ers with Brock Purdy, that's a no-brainer, especially against the Kansas City Chiefs. That might be their one weakness.
And we'll see if the moment is too big for Brock Purdy, right? Mr. Irrelevant 2 years ago, just his second season, while Patrick Mahomes is starting his fourth Super Bowl already in his career. Hey, the Cardinals Student Pass allows college students to get info on Cardinals internships, discounts, networking events, ticket offers, and more. Go to azcardinals.com/studentpass. Special thanks Jim Omohundro, Cody Fincher, Matt Lazarus, Baron Wolfley, and Frank Sanders, former Cardinals receiver. I'm Paul Calvisi. This has been the Big Red Rage presented by Santan Ford & Gilbert. We are Santan Ford.
Been listening to the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford & Gilbert, right on the price, right on the corner of the Santan 202 freeway in Val Vista. The Rage is brought to you by SeatGeek, your ticket to great seats, and by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcast. This has been an exclusive presentation of the Arizona Cardinals Football Club.